Welcome to the Center for Internet Security's podcast, Cybersecurity Where You Are. Cybersecurity affects us all, whether we are at home, managing a company, supporting clients, or even running a state or local government. Join CIS's Sean Atkinson and Tony Sager as they discuss trends and threats, ways to implement controls and infrastructure, explore best practices, and interview experts in the industry. We are here to bring clarity to these complex issues to bring confidence in the connected world.
Hello and welcome to the show, Cybersecurity Where You Are. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO here at the Center for Internet Security, and joined today by Mr. Marcus Sachs. Marcus, how are you, sir?
I'm very good, Sean. How are you?
Doing very well, doing very well. Great to have you here. What I'd like, Marcus, if you could just give us a little bit of your background and your role here at CIS.
So I'm a retired Army officer, and I actually was around when CIS got created a long, long time ago. I was just in the process of retiring from the Army and knew a lot of that original gang. So it's fun now coming to join CIS. It's almost like completing the circle and coming home. So I live in Huntsville, Alabama. We've been here about 5 years, moved down here from the Washington, D.C. area just about the time COVID was getting started. So it was an interesting time to move down here. I've been in the cybersecurity world since the early 90s officially. When I was in the Army, the last couple of jobs I had was about running networks, defending them, keeping the bad guys out. And the last unit I worked for was a joint task force for computer network defense that ultimately grew up and became Cyber Command. That was about 10, 12 years after we were created. So we were very small, created by the Secretary of Defense to figure out the way ahead in 1998. And then that organization became Cyber Command in 2010. So much, much bigger today than it was when it started off with just a few of us. After I retired from the Army, I went to the White House for a couple of years, worked in the National Security Council, doing national level cybersecurity policy. That was not something that I was expecting. This happened right after September 11th. And we were looking at all the different ways terrorists might do bad things to our country. And so we began developing policies and strategies for defending us against not just terrorists, but also other foreign threats. That's about the time CIS got started. So again, I've had that ongoing relationship since then. Moved out of government after a while, helped create Homeland Security in its early days, and then went to the private sector, worked with Stanford Research for a number of years, was at Verizon for about 8 years doing national security work. Then spent about 3 years as the chief security officer for the power grid, working for NERC. And then since leaving NERC, was worked with some startups, and then we moved to Alabama. When we got here, Auburn University was very interested in me, so I worked for them for about 3.5 years and then joined CIS this past spring. So that gets us up to the current day. But I've also been quite engaged in running different ISACs. So we ran the electricity ISAC when I was at NERC. When I was at Verizon, I was deeply engaged with the communications ISAC. Back to my SANS days, I used to run the SANS Internet Storm Center, and I used to be a SANS instructor. So I've got this cybersecurity stuff in my blood. Matter of fact, that might make a good country song. Just gotta get the rest of the words for it, or maybe rock and roll or something.
Absolutely. My goodness. So, I mean, if there's not really an industry, Mark, that you've not had experience in or had some part in formation, I mean, absolutely incredible background. But now as really the chief engineer, there's the topic that has come up that I know you're intimately involved with in terms of cyber-informed engineering. I want to, you know, kind of delve into that a little bit, but why this topic now is so important in the cybersecurity landscape of today.
It's an interesting idea. So a lot of people in cybersecurity look at it correctly through a lens of computer science and the ones and zeros and protecting the software, the hardware, making sure there's patching, that code works, you know, building compilers that won't write bad code. And that's good. We need to do that. But then there's the users of this infrastructure. And from my background, I'm an engineer. My undergrad degree was in civil engineering. And when I first came in the Army, that's what I was doing, was engineering work, building things, blowing things up, as we like to say in the military as well. With a a side interest in IT and computer networks. So it's been an interesting blend of engineering mixed, classic engineering mixed in with IT style engineering. So a few years ago, a concept started floating around Department of Energy that was focused on critical infrastructures, mostly power grid, but also gas and oil and railroads and others, of the consequences of a cyber attack. So as they became more and more dependent upon IT systems and digital controllers and decisions being made by computers, there began to become concern about the consequences of what happens if the computer fails. What happens if the trust isn't there? Probably one of the earliest ones that had the biggest impact was the 2015 incident in Ukraine, where some Russians got into the power grid there and remotely turned off a handful of substations. Now, luckily, the Ukrainians could go into manual mode. They sent power workers out to the substations and manually turned the power back on, even though the computers had shut it off. But that got everybody's attention of, okay, now it's no longer just an interesting thing that a computer can be broken into and a physical thing could happen. An actual breaker could be open or closed remotely by an adversary. But now you impact hospitals, you impact transportation systems, you impact others that are dependent on that power. Not that that hadn't been noticed before with weather type events, but we're now looking at it through a cyber lens. And that a lot of questions began to emerge of, are there other impacts, other consequences? And if there are, because these are engineered systems, could we engineer in ways to mitigate those consequences? So it's not so much about preventing or mitigating the cyber attack itself. It's how do we mitigate the consequences of a cyber attack through what we're now calling cyber-informed engineering. So engineering is the focus here. Cyber-informed being no different than, let's say you live in California and you're a civil engineer and you're going to design a building. You're going to design it to be a lot more earthquake proof than, say, somebody here in Alabama. We get an earthquake every now and then, maybe a magnitude 1 or 2, but nothing compared to what California gets. Here in Alabama, though, we do get an occasional tornado will come through, or a hurricane, or some other type of weather effect. So the engineers here will engineer infrastructures to be resilient against weather effects. California, maybe a little more towards earthquakes. Northern tier, more towards ice or ice storms. Now we want to add in cyber or cybersecurity. And if we have a system that depends upon IT and digital devices, if they fail, what could happen to the big system? So you see where I'm going here. When we say cyber informed, we're now talking about looking at all the different types of engineering, civil, mechanical, electrical, chemical, aeronautical. Look at it through the lens of the digital systems could create a threat to the system. How do we then mitigate the consequences of something going wrong in that digital system? That's easy to say. It's a high platitude, but we have to dig into the, okay, how do you exactly do that? That's been where I've been working. So the Department of Energy, of course, this is a few papers that came out. They were required in a federal budget from a few years ago, in the DOE budget, told to create a strategy, come up with a national strategy for cyber-informed engineering. Auburn University and some other universities were asked to help think about that, and that's how my first engagement formally with the CIE program began, was working with the team about 3 years ago that began developing the strategy, the national strategy. So it was published a couple of years back. Great to have a strategy. Now you have to implement it. And so we came out with an implementation guide. We've developed curriculum guides for colleges to use. There's another team that's working with companies, infrastructure companies, to actually go through some cases of, if I'm going to build something new, how can I build it to be resilient to a potential failure of a digital system? Or if I have something existing, is there a way I can retrofit it to make it resilient? So these are problem areas that we're working on actively. We've got a large number of people now across the United States working on the actual specifics of how you implement CIE into these different engineering systems. So let me make real clear before we move into other questions. This is not about making engineers into cybersecurity experts. We want to inform the engineers about the risks that come from these digital systems. Now, a lot of the engineering principles can certainly be used by the IT community and the security community to build more secure IT systems, absolutely. But that's not what this program is. And so there's sometimes a little bit of misunderstanding as to what CIE is about. And it really is focused on engineers to make them more informed about the risks of these computer systems and digital systems, and then have them think about that either as students or as practitioners as they're designing, building, maintaining the regular life cycle of an engineered product to make sure they've considered the impact and the consequences, the risks of using computer-based or digital-based systems.
Wonderful. Thank you. It's a great concept because, you know, when I first heard it, and Mark, I went down that path of, oh, so we then want to provide this framework, as it were, of assessment. And I was thinking a little bit differently. I was thinking, oh, we want to have engineering principles from a cybersecurity perspective. But no, we want to have a lens to look at engineering practices, as you mentioned, across all elements of engineering, and look to see where cyber can have an effect. Right, that there is a predominant threat now that with the integration of digital systems across engineering discipline, that we need to, as really as a community, one, from a cybersecurity perspective as myself, promote an ability, as you mentioned, an integration. So there's a strategy, there's an implementation guide. How can we then assist with the vernacular, as it were, or with methods to inform engineering practice to be, I'll add elements of resiliency or at least awareness as going into the design principles, or as you mentioned, and as we have aging infrastructure where we're trying to retrofit in order to, let's say, get to modern technological capabilities within these engineering disciplines, that's the approach, that's the problem that you're looking at right now. Is that fair to say?
I think that's spot on. And to bring it back home to CIS, through the ISAC, the multi-state ISAC, we reach thousands of governments, the SLTT community. Here in Huntsville, I've started talking to, and Huntsville's a member of the MSISAC, talking to their IT teams about how informed are their engineers, the city engineers, those who run the utility systems from the water supply, the power distribution, even the traffic lights, you know, to keep them synchronized, to keep traffic flow running, the mayor's office, all the things they have to worry about. From an engineering perspective, how informed are they about cybersecurity? And I got the expected response of, wow, that's something we really hadn't thought about and we need to work on it. So what we're thinking about now is perhaps through our outreach with the MSISAC is not only informing the IT teams about how to properly keep your systems patched and updated, the threats that are out there, the warnings, using all the services that CIS has to offer. We should also work with the engineering side of the SLTT community, getting them informed. Now, it's not, of course, to make new engineers out of them. CIS is not a civil engineering company or power company or so forth. But I think there's a lot we can do, and this is the interest we have, of helping our SLTT members to become, for their utility side, the engineering side of cities and counties and states, to become better cyber informed. And then we could become a vehicle, you know, for that type of education. By the way, it extends beyond engineering. As we've begun to mature this thinking, other words I've heard is, how about cyber informed healthcare? It's to where doctors and nurses and other healthcare professionals understand that if I'm hooking up a patient to an MRI machine, but that MRI machine is connected to a network, is it possible that the data coming off that MRI machine is not accurate? Could it have been influenced by the fact that it's connected to a network? That is an informed question from a doctor that would say, okay, yeah, I trust the machine, but if the machine is wrong, then what? Or as I get into telemedicine or get into all these other new areas that the health systems are getting into. You can also look at farming and agriculture. As we get more and more technical, tractors connected to satellites in order to plant things in perfect rows, should our farmers be cyber informed? Should the equipment manufacturers that build autonomous vehicles, should they be cyber informed? Of course, the answer is yes. And so this opens up a brand new area of rethinking cybersecurity is not just a problem for the computer science world to worry about, but also something that everybody, starting with engineers, but every other career field, every other professional that's out there should be cyber informed so that they are, whatever the lane is, whatever they're doing professionally, those decisions from thinking of something new all the way through to building and running it are done through a lens of being cyber informed. What if something goes wrong? How do I mitigate that consequence?
Wonderful. No, I think it's, and again, one of the things that it leads me to, Mark, is when I'm thinking through such a capability is, I think from the engineering perspective, it makes a lot of sense because of the foundational elements of setting up the respective infrastructure, right? Developed and managed through both design and implementation through engineering principles. Utilizing cyber informed in that space, it leads me to ask the question, does it take the onus of others in that space to be less cyber informed or more cyber informed based on the fact that we're permeating this through the entire life cycle of any underlying engineering discipline? I want to get your thoughts there.
Well, yeah, you hit right on it. Everybody needs to be more informed. This is not risk I can transfer to somebody else and say it's not my problem. I think we've done pretty good in that messaging over the last couple of decades of getting even individuals to understand they have a role in keeping not only themselves secure, but think about cyber-informed family. Okay, you've got, you know, from your own finances, most people are already aware the two-factor authentication is not necessarily there to protect the money in your bank account. The bank takes care of that. It's to protect you from being swindled. That somebody isn't going to fool you into giving over credentials so they can log in as you and steal money. They have to then go through a second factor to your phone. You've got to actually approve that transaction. Without 2FA, you don't have that. So these are other ways we're beginning to see society become more cyber informed. I don't want this consequence to happen. Therefore, I need to understand how to do a certain thing to keep that from happening. So yes, it requires everybody's engagement. I think where we struggle, though, is at the senior level. If you look at businesses, corporations, even with governments, those at the top level, the C-suite, as we like to call it, or the directors on the board, oftentimes want to just push all this down, power it down, let other people worry about it. So we could even add to this a cyber-informed board of directors of a company. You know, that fully understands the consequences to that business, the loss of revenue, the loss of business, the loss of whatever to your stakeholders is dependent upon your cyber systems. You can cut this out of the interview if you like, but let's look at Colonial Pipeline. This is Exhibit A, right? Colonial Pipeline gets hit with a ransomware attack. This is a couple of years ago. That attack did not get into the control systems for their pipeline. It was only on the enterprise side. They shut down the pipeline operations because they were afraid that it might actually get over there and start, you know, create a safety problem. But they also shut it down because they couldn't bill their customers. It was an enterprise problem. Well, a cyber-informed pipeline company would have already thought about this ahead of time. It says, okay, if my billing system gets hit with a cyber attack, I'm still pumping millions of gallons or cubic feet of gas through my pipes. I need to have a manual method or a backup or something in place to where my business doesn't come to an end. That's a board decision. That's not really somebody down in the CISO area or in the IT shop, right? That the board needs to fully understand how that business works and be cyber informed as the potential consequences of a disruption coming through a computer network. In that case, the disruption was ransomware, but it could have been anything. Right? You see where I'm going with this? This mindset, it's not just engineering. It really applies to everybody, even though my focus tends to be on the engineering side. We can transfer this concept to just about anything within a government, within a business, an organization, even down to the family level.
Definitely. Well, I think the reason is because we're all part of an underlying society that is cyber connected, right? So we go through mechanization of underlying systems, products, capabilities, and provisions of services. We look at now the integration of smart cities. We're looking at the dependence being digital. And if we're going to be part of ultimately a solution to manage that through each level of an underlying life cycle from both design to its utility and operation, each one of us necessarily has a responsibility. And you hit one thing that I think is very, very important from both the board and the C-suite perspective. I don't know that there's any industry, any parenthetic, where cyber-informed person is not their responsibility, that this is something like I usually use this analogy, Mark, and I want to get your thoughts on it. They have great financial understanding, right? Because those are the terms that have been discussed for hundreds of years. But now that we enter into the digitization piece, cyber elements also need to be part of that vernacular and a responsibility for everyone to learn, specifically at those levels. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. And when you think of a board or others at the leadership level, the main purpose that they're there for is understanding risk to the organization and steering the organization strategically to avoid those risky areas so that their stakeholders, which could be shareholders, could be constituents, depending on what we're talking about, whether it's a private company or a government or a nonprofit organization, whatever, that leadership team has to steer through the waters of risk. Well, now cyber is a risky area, as we all know. And you can't just turn to the IT or the security team and say, this is your problem. Brief me once a month at the board meeting on, how many attacks you've deflected, and I'll be happy. And no, we don't do that in other risky areas. We'll go deep into it so the board fully understands the risk, and then the board can make a risk-informed decision. Here's what we need to do. Here's resources that need to be allocated. Here's policies that need to be written. Things that a board does. And I think that this, the smarter companies today, and smarter governments and others, particularly if we're becoming more and more digital, where cities are absolutely dependent upon these types of systems, the city council, the mayor, the county commissioners, whatever the term is, have got to be just as informed about the cybersecurity risks so they can make those types of decisions just as much as they would be about working with a union or working with weather or working with anything else that could be disruptive or additive. It could be positive reinforcement as well. Are there things that cybersecurity can do to make a better community? Well, that's kind of turning risk the other way around, making it good. And that's, again, something that a leadership team needs to fully understand so they can make leadership decisions based on that.
Oh, absolutely. No, it's an opportunity, right? Because we look at, when we're aligned to cyber-informed engineering, I think it also leads us to an ability to then contextualize the risk by being cyber-informed so that our decision-making process is, one, a lot clearer, and two, not dependent on what Tony Sager would say is the wizards, right? That those that do all this, these elements with cyber, and it's all magic to everybody else. We're past that, right? The wizardry is gone. It's now a responsibility to understand, integrate that into your decision making per cyber informed. And I go to one quote that I love, Louis Pasteur, with chance favors the prepared mind. And I think taking the chance of not being cyber informed does not allow for preparation and doesn't allow us then to move into a position where we can actually have these conversations across different parentheses and different elements, as I mentioned, through this life cycle, because we need to be speaking really that same language. And if it's not cyber informed, I think there's a disservice. And then ultimately, there are missing elements that we can then not understand the consequences, because that seems to me like a domino effect in a lot of cases. Without having that knowledge permeate, I think it leads to elements where ultimately Colonial Pipeline, these types of issues are going to continue to occur. And we kind of got to put, you know, kind of the mark in the road. This is, you know, where engineering common principles existed. This is now where cyber-informed engineering has to take over, because if not, we're going to just keep making the same mistakes, as far as I'm concerned.
And since you mentioned preparation, there's some preparation we as society need to do that's not there yet in order to get us to, you know, this dream of where everybody's informed. So first problem, and you just mentioned it a moment ago, I don't know if you heard what you said. How do you measure this? How do you measure cybersecurity? Yep. So an engineer is trained how to measure things, how to repeat things. So if I ask an engineer to design an I-beam to hold a certain number of tons of weight, odds are pretty good two different engineers are going to come up with the same solution, because steel is steel is steel. We understand how it works, and we're going to engineer within a few millimeters the same solution. IT and computer systems, though, don't follow the rules of physics. Information flowing, you know, as little photons of light or bursts of electricity or whatever. I mean, at that level, maybe it's physics, but the information that's inside of it doesn't follow the same rules. This frustrates the engineering community. So, for example, if I'm going to engineer something to resist a hurricane, I know the hurricane's going to blow at 120 miles an hour. I know what a wind load at 120 miles an hour is against this type of surface. I can engineer in the structural components that are needed to resist that. I can do the same thing with ice. I can do it with earthquakes and all this physical stuff around us. How do I engineer a system, though, to resist ransomware? How do I engineer a system to resist an adversary in a foreign country that's bound and determined to cause my infrastructure to fail? That's hard, because we're looking for math and we're looking for tables and charts. And so we've got to do a lot of research here. And this is an area that universities are working on and researchers. Can we start to apply some of that quantification so that an engineer is more comfortable in designing something that when they put their seal on it, they say, I as an engineer now, stamping this document and saying it will resist whatever these risks are. They probably won't do that until we figure out some way to quantify in numbers what the risk, you know, looks like. Now, in parallel with that, because I just mentioned, you know, engineers have put seals on, in the IT world, there's no licensing per se. So the engineers have the professional engineer license. These are run by state boards of license examiners, and you can't practice in a state without being a licensed professional engineer. You can't call yourself an engineer. So if you want to build a deck off the back of your house, I mean, you design it and build it yourself, but if it falls down, it's your fault. But you go hire an engineer to do it for you, and that engineer will come up with a set of plans, and they'll stamp it, and it'll say on there, if you build it exactly the way I designed it, I'm hanging my career on this, and it is designed, it will not fall down. Now, that's assuming you build it properly. Well, in cybersecurity and IT, that doesn't exist yet. So we don't have that licensing. So one of the projects I'm working on is the licensing world. So I am a PE. I'm a professional engineer for civil engineering. There is no such thing as a cyber-informed professional engineer. We don't have that yet. But we're talking to the people who do this credentialing, who issue these licenses. And their ears are wide open, and they're saying, yes, we need to do this. We need to add this into the licensing thing, but not today. We're not ready yet. We've got to have that math and science, that stuff done ahead of time. We need to think this through. So if I ask a question of an engineer on a PE exam, with 100% accuracy, I can tell you what the answer is. It can't be fuzzy. And right now with computer science and computer security, answers tend to be fuzzy. You know, what's the best firewall rule to resist a ransomware attack? It depends. Well, that's not the answer you want on a PE exam. You gotta have some precision, right? So
yes,
we've got some growing to do. That being said, there is at the software level, there's systems integration. So if I'm building a missile system or I'm building a dam or whatever it is I'm building, I'm going to be integrating pieces of software together to make this thing work. So I'm doing software integration. That is more of a trade than a profession. If you think of a trade to be like welding, plumbing, you know, that kind of world, there is a credential now being looked at to where I can certify that somebody actually knows what they're doing when it comes to software integration, bringing together different pieces of software that, so that the, what's been built is in fact secure and safe. This is a really cool first step. Now, that credential is not a license, no more than let's say I've got a credential that says I know how to weld. I've been to welding school. There's the certificate on the wall that says I know how to weld. That's not a license to be a welder, but it is a credential that says I kind of know what I'm doing. And I've been accredited by somebody that says I know how to properly weld. So if we can start doing that in software, if we can begin building in these credentials, that now begins to build some building blocks that can get us towards the point where professional engineers can also be credentialed and ultimately licensed to where they can practice as a cyber-informed engineer. Again, this may be 10 years down the road, 15 years down the road, but I think it's an exciting time because it's an opportunity here for us to think about infrastructures, critical infrastructures, as being built upon a very risky, hard to define foundation known as information technology, you know, the ones and the zeros. It's more than just the fluids and the pipes and the metal and the wood and all the things that we normally think about as an infrastructure, but this undefined thing that's brought in through trust in digital systems that are, add, you know, well, we haven't talked about AI yet, but if you add in artificial intelligence, that's a whole nother risky area that has, it's been around for a number of decades, but in the last couple of years, it's really become a common term because of the generative AI. We're already looking at that. The CIE community is okay, because that has emerged at about the same time that CIE has emerged. So do we need to also think about artificial intelligence? The answer is absolutely yes. And we need to have engineers that are informed about thinking machines, not just decision-making machines, but ones that can autonomously think and can autonomously make decisions and be predictive. Can that add risk to an engineered infrastructure of some sort? And if the answer is yes, which probably is, how does that engineer then address that in their design so that it will fail? If it fails because of AI, it fails in a way that won't kill anybody, or it fails in a predictable manner. And that's really what this game is trying to figure out where a failure might happen, try and control that failure in a safe manner so that people don't get killed. And if we're doing that, then we're taking a much, much better step towards integrating all this IT and AI and all this neat stuff into our infrastructures.
Mark, it's a great episode. I've got to have you back to talk about the AI component, because that's huge and deserves its own episode in my mind. But thank you so much for being a guest. I want to have you back, as mentioned. And again, thank you for your service. And again, thank you for your continued thought leadership in the space. It's absolutely phenomenal.
Thank you, Sean. And I look forward to the next time we can sit down and maybe AI we'll go into. There's many other topics we can go into as well. Thank you very much. I appreciate
absolutely. Thank you. And thank you to our audience. Again, remember to subscribe in all the usual ways. Questions, comments, concerns, podcast@cisecurity.org. And with that, we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the show today. The thoughts and opinions expressed by our podcast guests are solely theirs and do not necessarily reflect those of CIS. If you're interested in learning more about how to grow your cybersecurity program, the free tools available to help you on your journey, or to get involved with the CIS volunteer community, visit our website, cisecurity.org. Start secure and stay secure.